A challenge to Wisconsin's abortion ban could already be making its way to the state Supreme Court. The law was first passed in 1849 and went back into effect last June when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In our series, How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849, WPR reporters explore how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since. In part two of our series, WPR's Hope Kerwin looked into how the ban was enforced, and she joins me now with more. Hope, in practice, how total was this near-total abortion ban?
It's clear that abortions continue to take place across the state after the ban was put in place. We don't have complete figures, but historians say there's a lot of evidence of this. And even the State Medical Society, which had backed the ban, acknowledged that illegal abortion was still happening regularly.
Then how common was it for prosecutors to bring charges against someone under this law?
Not very common, as far as we can tell. A researcher who surveyed available county court records from 1849 to 1900 found only 17 cases during those 50 years. And of those 17, only 5 were found guilty. We talked to Marquette University law professor Lisa Mazey. She said undoubtedly people were still having abortions. They just weren't being prosecuted for them.
That procedure is sort of inherently a very private, personal one, right? And so in order to find out that it has happened, you need people to tell you, to tell law enforcement.
So as long as no one admitted being involved in the abortion, or as it was often called in the newspapers then, an illegal operation, then police and prosecutors wouldn't have evidence that an abortion had taken place.
And without that evidence, they couldn't prosecute. But there was an effort to increase enforcement of abortion bans starting in the mid-20th century, partly because surgical abortions were becoming more popular. But Lauren McIver-Thompson told us it was also part of a broader focus on enforcing anti-obscenity laws. She is a history professor at Kennesaw State University in Georgia who studies birth control and abortion in the 20th century.
They're lumping in illegal abortion alongside all kinds of illicit sex, whether it's, you know, same-sex sex or heterosexual sex outside of marriage.
But even during that push to enforce the law, they would have had to find some proof that the law had been broken, correct?
Yes. And what usually prompts officials to bring charges under the abortion ban is the death of someone who's pregnant. Let's look at the case of Hazel Williamson from Wanakee. In 1943, Williamson traveled to Milwaukee with a list of 3 doctors her fiancé had given her. The 34-year-old was a farmer's daughter, an active member of the Wanakee Women's Club, and one of many women working in a factory during World War II. She was also 2 to 5 months pregnant. She chose the first name on her list, Dr. Edmund Tim.
And we'll come back to that list in a moment, but what happens when she goes to Dr. Tim?
Tim sent Williamson to what was called a lying-in home, used by people seeking an abortion. Reports say at least 5 abortion patients were staying at this house when Williamson was there. Williamson returned to Tim's office for an operation. A witness later testified she said Tim was, quote, like a horse doctor, and that the operation hurt her. That evening, she started running a fever. 2 days later, Tim performed a second procedure on Williamson. Early the next morning, she died from sepsis and a uterine hemorrhage.
So the authorities would have taken Dr. Tim's treatment of Williamson as evidence that he was responsible for her death and the death of the fetus.
Plus, Tim arrived at the lying-in home shortly after Williamson's death. And before he called the coroner, he went through her purse to find that list of doctors and ripped his name off the top. But Tim was still charged with second-degree manslaughter under the state's abortion law.
And ultimately, he was found guilty. So this case highlights that people knew where to get an abortion. And in large cities like Milwaukee, there was an industry, even if it was small and underground, that was supporting abortion procedures.
Right. Williamson's procedure was clearly botched. But McIver-Thompson says it was probably unusual at the time.
We do start seeing more surgical abortions being performed in the early 20th century than we did in the 19th century, just as kind of medical advancements in surgery are made, things become a little bit safer. And in fact, by the 1930s, surgical abortion is actually pretty safe.
Were doctors and other practitioners the only ones charged under the law?
That mostly appears to be the case. But there was a prosecution in 1933 of a 28-year-old Madison woman named Lily Cordio. Cordia was charged with performing an illegal operation on 25-year-old Elizabeth Rip. Rip was the girlfriend of Cordia's younger brother and was hospitalized after a miscarriage. Police questioned her just hours before she died, and that's when she implicated Cordia. Cordia admitted that she told Rip how to end a pregnancy, but she was adamant that she wasn't directly involved and told Rip it was dangerous. She said Rip came to her house, went into her bathroom, and a few minutes later came out and announced that she had done it. McIver Thompson says this scenario is not surprising.
That was a knowledge that was shared by women passed down at the kitchen table, you know, over cups of coffee. You know, you would share what methods had worked.
Was there evidence Cordia may have performed the abortion?
Police did find medical instruments in Cordia's home, but McIver Thompson says you could order dilation instruments and vaginal probes from the Sears catalog or any drugstore.
On the one hand, yes, those things can be used to perform an abortion on yourself, but they also were used for other reasons, you know, women seeking to treat themselves at home for vaginal and uterine problems.
Cordia initially faced three charges: second-degree manslaughter for Rip's death, performing an illegal operation, and advising Rip on how to perform the abortion. Only the last charge, which was brought under the state's morality laws, makes it to trial. In the end, Cordia is found guilty and is sentenced to 6 months in county jail.
Let's talk a little bit more about the morality laws that you mentioned. In talking about a case of an unmarried Racine woman in 1922...
Anna Young obtained an abortion when she was between 6 and 8 weeks pregnant and was hospitalized after the procedure. Young lived, but police found out about her case, and that led to the arrest of Dr. A. M. Foster. Foster claimed he did not perform an abortion, but a jury found him guilty. But then Foster sued the state. He claimed that even if he had performed the abortion, he shouldn't be convicted under the state's abortion ban. He argued the state's morality laws applied to his case because Young's pregnancy was so early on.
There are these statutes related to abortion that the legislature created in 1858, cataloged under offenses against chastity, morality, and decency. One of them made it illegal to help a woman procure a miscarriage.
And the state Supreme Court ended up agreeing with Foster. Quote, a 2 months embryo is not a human being in the eye of the law, and therefore its destruction constitutes an offense against morality and not against lives and persons. Lisa Mazey told us the court essentially assumes the morality laws were created to cover situations that involved a fetus that wasn't yet a person.
The court tries to make sense of legislative enactments. Right? And they're trying to think there had to be a logical reason they did what they did.
This interpretation stood until the 1950s, that abortions in early pregnancy are covered by the morality laws. In 1955, the state legislature eliminated the morality laws and clarified that an unborn child, quote, meant a human being from the time of conception. That meant anyone who terminated a pregnancy at any stage could be arrested and charged under the abortion ban.
WPR's Hope Kerwin, thanks so much.
You're welcome.